Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
It's Saturday the 27th of April. I'm Kira Revins, and this was a week that saw Rishi go all out on new policies, good news for Ukraine, bad news for Donald Trump, and London's flirtation with the apocalypse.
Grab a cup of something hot, put up your feet, and get up to speed on the seven biggest stories of the week. This is the Standout 7 from the Smart 7.
It's news,
but not the news.
With the clock counting down to the local elections, this week saw Prime Minister Rishi Sunak swing into action with a fistful of policies and some stern words designed to impress wavering Tory voters. He kicked off his campaign last Friday with an attack on what he called sick note culture. He was fed up with people not turning up to work and says that benefits are becoming a lifestyle choice for some. He was particularly annoyed that the number of people failing a work capability assessment has tripled over the last 13 years, and he says people are not three times sicker.
Feeling anxious or depressed, then of course you should get the support and treatment you need to manage your condition. But that doesn't mean we should assume you can't engage in work. That's not going to help you, and it's not fair on everyone else either.
Rishi seemed to have forgotten the pandemic and the impact of long COVID, along with the fact that he's just scrapped the work and health programme, which was specifically designed to help disabled people into work. Former Health Minister Lord Bethell says Rishi's plan doesn't make a lot of sense, particularly when many skilled overseas workers are leaving the UK.
The idea that people who have got a genuine complaint should somehow try and battle it out at work is totally counterproductive and often leads to them joining the ranks of the long-term sick. If you're sick, get the support you need and come back fighting fit.
Monday saw the safety of Rwanda bill in Rishi's sights as he held a press conference to announce that he'd become sick and tired of delays with the safety of Rwanda bill and ordered it to be passed through the Commons on Monday evening, however long it took. And he said he's making a pledge that flights will take off soon.
The first flight will leave in 10 to 12 weeks. If Labour peers had not spent weeks holding up the bill in the House of Lords to try to block these flights altogether, we would have begun this process weeks ago.
The only problem is, of course, that there are more Tory peers than Labour peers, and it's been his own Tory peers who keep inflicting defeats on the legislation. But finally, after a phenomenal game of parliamentary ping pong, shortly before midnight on Monday night, the bill was passed by the House of Lords. Despite Rishi's best efforts, though, his arch nemesis, Suella Braverman, says the bill is still not fit for purpose.
The Prime Minister has pledged to stop the boats. This bill, as drafted, will not achieve that goal. It's fatally flawed. It has too many loopholes, and that's why I voted against it.
Just hours after Parliament finally passed the safety of Rwanda bill on Wednesday morning, five more people drowned attempting to cross the channel. Humanitarian groups, including the Refugee Council, called for more safe routes to be opened for those seeking asylum. Rishi had headed to Poland, where he said the tragic deaths just showed why the plan to send people to Rwanda is so important. Labour's Shadow Home Secretary Yvette Cooper believes the scheme is doomed to failure.
This is an extortionately expensive gimmick, and it's costing us around over £500 million for just 300 people. It's less than 1% of asylum seekers, and there's no plan.
Even with the bill now law, it's not clear how quickly or how many flights might be sent to Rwanda. In fact, it's not even clear what aircraft the government intends to use. Minister for Illegal Migration Michael Tomlinson says that the government is deliberately holding back its cunning plan.
There are those who are determined that this policy is going to fail. There are those who are determined to stop this policy. There'll be legal challenges. We're determined to stop the boats. So the more detail I give you is the more ammunition for those who don't want this policy to succeed.
With both the PM and Leader of the Opposition out and about, Prime Minister's Question Time featured Deputy PM Oliver Dowden facing off against Labour's Deputy Leader Angela Rayner, and it got pretty spicy pretty quickly. Angela wanted to know if rumours were true that Oliver has been pushing for an early general election.
Has he finally realised that when he stabbed Boris Johnson in the back to get his mate into number 10, he was ditching their biggest election winner for a pint-sized loser? Yeah.
The pint-sized loser reference seemed to genuinely shock the Tory MPs, and there was a chorus of boos as they defended their short King Rishi. Dowden came back with a predictable dig at the ongoing tax row over Angela's old council house.
To begin with, it is a pleasure to have another exchange with the Right Honourable Lady in this house, our fifth in 12 months. Any more of these, and she'll be claiming it as her principal residence.
Labour continued the quiet rollout of their election manifesto on Thursday by tackling one of the major issues that affects anyone who commutes across the UK. The trains. Expensive and inconsistent service has become a hallmark of privatised railways, with overcrowding and cancellations causing misery for thousands. Now Labour is proposing that it's time to tackle the train problem, and is proposing to fully nationalise the railways within 5 years of taking power. Shadow Transport Secretary Louise Hay says people are already paying for rail.
30 years after privatisation, the taxpayer already funds our railways. The subsidy to railways is over £4 billion. And the fact is, the taxpayer can't afford to continue with the current broken model.
The Tories' Mark Harper says the plan is unfunded, and Andy Bagnall, who is the CEO of Rail Partners and an umbrella body that represents the private train companies, says that while change is needed, nationalisation is not the answer.
We would argue that the model of nationalisation will lead to higher costs. You lose that commercial focus of the operator. The approach that gets the best of the both worlds, it gives you a joined up system, like Transport for London has, is to have Great British Railways as a public sector body, but then harnessing operators to really focus outwards on the passenger.
It took 484 days for the US Congress to pass a new aid bill for Ukraine, but last Saturday they finally managed to get a $60 billion package over the line. Speaker Mike Johnson had delayed and rejected bipartisan bills previously, but he seemed to have had a change of heart in the last few weeks and managed to put together a combined bill with aid for Ukraine, Israel, Gaza and Taiwan. It passed with 311 votes to 112 against, as Democrats weighed in to provide much needed military assistance. Ukrainian President Zelensky was extremely relieved to see the stalemate on Capitol Hill broken.
I think this support will really strengthen the armed forces of Ukraine, and we will have a chance for victory if Ukraine really gets the weapons system, which we need so much, which thousands of soldiers need so much.
Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, in the middle of his week of action, intended to impress the voting public with his dynamism and turn around the polls before the local election. He headed to Poland on Tuesday. There he spoke to Ukrainian President Zelensky and also held a press conference with Polish PM Donald Tusk and NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. Rishi said the UK is fully behind NATO and committed to continuing support for Ukraine.
We've entered a period in history in which competition between countries has sharpened profoundly. An axis of authoritarian states with different values to ours are increasingly assertive.
The UK has committed £500 million worth of support to Ukraine, including vehicles, weapons and 4 million rounds of ammunition. Rishi also says defence spending will rise to 2.5% of GDP by 2030, and that would mean a defence budget of £87 billion, with £3 billion a year committed to Ukraine for as long as required. NATO's Jens Stoltenberg says that it makes sense for NATO and the UK to support Ukraine now.
By providing support to Ukraine, we help them to destroy Russian combat capabilities that could potentially be a threat against us. Support Ukraine is not charity. Support Ukraine is an investment in our own security, and the alternative is more expensive.
Rishi's high-speed European tour continued on Wednesday, heading to Germany to meet with Chancellor Olaf Scholz. The focus on the trip was to deepen relationships between England and Germany, particularly when it comes to defence cooperation, with both men agreed that their countries will support Ukraine for as long as it takes to defeat Russia. Rishi's been focused on increasing defence spending this week, and he says that the UK and Germany are on the same page when it comes to defence spending.
We meet as a war rages on our continent and new threats are rising around the world. And we stand here today together as the leading defence spenders in Europe, unshakable NATO allies and the two largest military supporters of Ukraine in Europe.
Ukraine had more good news from the US, as following a bipartisan Senate vote, Joe Biden was able to sign the $95 billion aid bill, which includes $60 billion worth of support for the beleaguered country. The first shipment of arms and ammunition worth $1 billion is ready to roll as Biden celebrated what he called a good day for world peace.
I'm making sure the shipments start right away. In the next few hours, literally the few hours, we're going to begin sending in for air defense munitions, for artillery, for rocket systems and armored vehicles.
Donald Trump was back in court on Monday for his election interference trial, which relates to hush money payments to adult actress Stormy Daniels. The jury has been sworn in, and Monday saw opening arguments from both the defence and the prosecution. The first witness to be called was the appropriately named David Pecker, who was the publisher of US magazine The National Enquirer, and is accused of using a technique called catch and kill to hush up stories of Trump's bad behaviour. Outside the court on Monday, he was still giving out about the Attorney General and his fraud trial, partly because she questioned how the $175 million bond in that case has been presented.
On the Letitia James case, she's the worst attorney general in the country, by the way, and she keeps a lot of business out of New York, and businesses that are here are leaving. Somebody's going to step in, the governor, somebody has to step in and do something because your businesses are fleeing.
Tuesday was another bruising day for former President Donald Trump in the New York courthouse as he sits through his criminal trial on election interference. The day started with a hearing on whether or not Donald had breached the gag order that Judge Merchan had put in place, with the prosecution submitting 10 separate examples they claimed should attract fines. While they were arguing the case in court, Trump tweeted again, attacking the judge, who has reserved judgment on the matter for now. The trial continues and Trump continues to get angrier, ranting outside the courtroom about policing restrictions, preventing his supporters from turning up. Sadly, there are no such restrictions.
What's going on is a disgrace. Now, it's interesting outside. For great Americans, people that want to come down and they want to protest at the court, we have more police presence here than anyone's ever seen. For blocks, you can't get near this courthouse.
Even for those who were committed watchers of Donald Trump court cases, Thursday was a lot. In three separate cases, Trump was before the Supreme Court seeking immunity, continued his criminal trial in Manhattan, and lost a bid for an appeal in the E. Jean Carroll case. The New York trial heard more stories from the National Enquirer's David Pecker, but most interestingly, the fact that he and the magazine refused to pay Stormy Daniels directly, it appears because of concerns about the 2016 election. The main event of the day was Trump's team presenting their case for full presidential immunity at the Supreme Court, a claim Trump has been making publicly for months. It's always hard to read how the Supreme Court will decide, but Trump's legal team came under real pressure over the ridiculous scope of immunity they are asking for, including this example from Judge Sotomayor.
If the president decides that his rival is a corrupt person and he orders the military to assassinate him, is that within his official acts that for which he's can get immunity?
It would depend on the hypothetical, but we can see that could well be an official act.
It could, and why? Because he's doing it for personal reasons.
Thursday saw dramatic events unfold in Scottish politics, which left First Minister Humza Yousaf in deep political trouble. It all started with an early morning meeting at Bute House between the SNP leader and the co-leaders of the Scottish Green Party, followed by an emergency cabinet meeting. Yousaf called in Patrick Harvey and Lorna Slater, who were both junior ministers, as well as the co-leaders of the Scottish Greens, and told them they were sacked and that the power-sharing agreement, which dated back to 2021, was being ripped up. It came after rising tensions between the two parties over the First Minister rolled back Green initiatives, but he was putting a brave face on matters on Thursday morning.
We need to speak to the country with one voice, our voice. And as such, I am clear that today marks a new beginning for the SNP government. I have a clear policy agenda that I wish to take forward.
That agenda is immediately at risk, though, as he's now facing a no-confidence motion with a minority government, which could see him lose his job next week. Lorna Slater, co-leader of the Scottish Greens, said he's brought it on himself by failing to manage factions within the SNP.
I think that he has caved in to the right wing of his party, to some of the most regressive, politics in Scotland, and undone our progressive cooperation agreement.
Still to come on The Stand at 7, London gets a little bit apocalyptic and Kevin Bacon heads back to high school.
Right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back.
GB News was in the spotlight this week as Ofcom issued warnings about the impartiality rules in the run-in to the local elections and a potential general election. The regulator Ofcom has found that five shows presented by sitting Tory MPs breached impartiality rules, while Lawrence Fox's show broke rules on offensive content. They warned that serving MPs will have to come off air once a general election is called, but Nigel Farage will be able to present his show, although the regulator has warned that it will act quickly if there's any hint of impartiality. GB News founder and Spectator magazine chairman Andrew Neil appeared at the House of Lords on Tuesday to testify before the Communications and Digital Committee. He left the channel pretty quickly after it launched, and financial results this week show it lost £42 million in the financial year to May 2023. Mr. Neil said he can't understand why Ofcom haven't taken firmer action, suggesting that the regulator needs to find a backbone. He also sounded disappointed about the direction the channel has headed.
What I didn't want it to become was an outlet for bizarre conspiracy theories or anti-vaxxers, basically the nutty end of politics.
If the Daily News is making you long for the end of the world, you might well have thought your luck was in on Wednesday morning. First Big Ben stopped, and then four horses burst through the streets of London, one of which was covered in blood, in a highly dramatic and apocalyptic scene. But it turned out not to be a dramatic omen. Firstly, Big Ben recovered, although it did bong inaccurately at 10 a.m. And in fact, there were five horses who got startled by builders and were all recaptured. The horses were in fact part of the Household Cavalry, and several of them were seriously injured in the incident, which saw one of them crash into a bus. A number of soldiers were also slightly injured in the incident, as Commanding Officer Lieutenant Colonel Matt Woodward explained.
We would like to express heartfelt gratitude for the swift responses of the Met Police, City of London Police, the Royal Mews, the London Ambulance Service, the London Fire Brigade, and members of the public in reacting as quickly as they did. This enabled swift treatment of our soldiers and helped bring our injured horses to safety.
Kevin Bacon has been an icon for quite some time now, long before he sold us phones on TV. He was incredibly cool in the 1984 movie Footloose. It spawned a killer soundtrack and plenty of magical moments. It's only a matter of time before somebody reboots it with Conor McGregor in the lead role. In the meantime, Kevin took a trip down memory lane this weekend as he headed back to the high school where the movie was filmed for a 40-year reunion. He received a rapturous reception from the students at Payson School in Utah, including a moment that just made him feel old.
A young woman said to me, "You know, my grandfather was in school here when you were doing the movie. Your grandfather, if going for the 40th anniversary wasn't enough," I was like, "Wow, okay. Check yourself, buddy."
You've been listening to The Smart 7. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 a.m. Hit that follow button and have a great day.
Give us 7 minutes and we'll give you the world.